Many of us live from day to day with unrelieved pain. It may be a small part of our lives, or it may take up a large, unbearable portion of it. But what is pain? Most of us agree that it is something we would like to be free of. Let's look at what we can learn from it. Where does it come from? What is it trying to tell us? The dictionary defines pain as an unpleasant or distressing sensation due to bodily injury or disorder, as well as a mental or emotional suffering or torment. Since pain is an outgrowth of both mental and physical dis-ease, it is clear that both the mind and the body are susceptible to it. I recently saw a wonderful example as I watched two little girls playing in a park. The first child raised her hand to playfully slap her friend on the arm. Before she was able to connect, the other little girl said, "Ow!" And the first little girl looked at her and said, "Why did you say ow? I haven't even touched you yet." To which her friend quickly replied, "Well, I knew it was going to hurt." In this instant, the mental pain presumed the expected physical pain. Pain comes to us in many forms: a scratch, a bump, a bruise, dis-ease, uneasy sleep, a threat, a knotty feeling in your stomach, a numbing sensation in your arm or leg. Sometimes it hurts a lot, sometimes only a little, but we know it's there. In most cases, it's trying to tell us something. At times, the message is obvious. A sour stomach experience during the work week, but not on the weekend, may indicate a need for an attitude change or for a job change. And many of us know the significance of the pain that occurs after a night of excessive drinking. Whatever the message, we must remember that the human body is a wonderfully constructed piece of machinery. It tells us that there are problems, but only if we are willing to listen. Unfortunately, many of us do not take or make the time to listen. Pain is actually one of the body's last resort messages to tell us that something is wrong in our lives. We are really off track somewhere. The body is always aspiring for optimum health, no matter what we do to it. However, if we abuse our bodies tremendously, we contribute to the conditions of our dis-ease. When we first feel pain, what do? We usually run to the medicine cabinet or to the drugstore, and we take a pill. In effect, we say to the body, "Shut up, I don't want to hear you." The body will quiet down for a little bit, then the whisperings return, and this time a little louder. Maybe we go to the doctor for an injection or a prescription, or we do something else. But at some point, we have to pay attention to what is going on, because we may have a full-blown dis-ease of some sort. Even at that point, some people still want to play victim and still don't listen. Others awaken to what's going on and are willing to make changes. It's okay. We all learn in different ways. The answers may be as simple as getting a good night's sleep, or not going out 7 nights a week, or not pushing yourself at work. Allow yourself to listen to your body, because it does want to get well. Your body wants to be healthy, and you can cooperate with it. When I first feel pain or discomfort, I quiet myself. I trust that my higher power will let me know what needs to be changed in my life, so that I can be free from this dis-ease. In these quiet times, I visualize the most perfect natural setting, with my favorite flowers growing in abundance all around me. I can feel and smell the sweet warm air as it blows gently across my face, and I concentrate on relaxing every muscle in my body. When I feel that I have reached a state of complete relaxation, I simply ask my inner wisdom, "How am I contributing to this problem? What is it that I need to know? What areas of my life are in need of change?" Then I breathe, and let the answers pour over me. The answers may not come at that moment, but I know that they will be revealed to me soon. I know that whatever changes are needed are the right ones for me, and that I will be completely safe no matter what unfolds before me. Sometimes you wonder how you can accomplish such changes. How will I live? What about the children? How will I pay my bills? Again, trust your higher power to show you the means to live a plentiful, pain-free life. I also suggest that you make changes one step at a time. Lao Tse said, "The journey of 1,000 miles begins with one step." One small step added to another can create significant major advancement. Once you go about making your changes, please remember that the pain does not necessarily disappear overnight, and yet it may. It has taken time for pain to surface, therefore it may take some time to recognize that it is no longer needed. Be gentle with yourself. Don't gauge your progress by someone else's. You are unique and have your own way of handling your life. Put your trust in your higher self in order to free yourself of all physical and emotional pain. Forgiveness is the key to freedom. I often ask clients, "Would you rather be right or would you rather be happy?" We all have opinions on who was right and who was wrong according to our own perceptions, and we can all find ways to justify our feelings. We want to punish others for what they did to us. However, we are the ones running the story over and over in our own minds. It is foolish for us to punish ourselves in the present because someone hurt us in the past. To release the past, we want to be willing to forgive, even if we don't know how. Forgiveness means giving up our hurtful feelings and just letting the whole thing go. A state of non-forgiveness actually destroys something within ourselves. No matter what avenue of spirituality you follow, you will usually find that forgiveness is an enormous issue at any time, but most particularly when there is an illness. When we are ill, we really need to look around and see who it is we need to forgive. And usually the very person who we think we will never forgive is the one we need to forgive the most. Not forgiving someone else doesn't harm the other person in the slightest, but it plays havoc with us. The issues aren't theirs, the issues are ours. The grudges and hurts you feel have to do with forgiving yourself, not someone else. Affirm that you are totally willing to forgive everyone. I am willing to free myself from the past. I am willing to forgive all those who may ever have harmed me. And I forgive myself for having harmed others. If you think of anyone who may have harmed you in any way at any point in your life, bless that person with love and release them and then dismiss the thought. I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't forgiven the people who have hurt me. I would not want to punish myself today for what they did to me in the past. I'm not saying that it would be easy. It's just that now I can look back at that stuff and say, "Oh yes, that's something that happened. However, I don't live there anymore." And it is not the same as condoning their behavior. If you feel ripped off by another, know that nobody can take anything from you that is rightfully yours. If it belongs to you, it will return to you at the right time. If something doesn't come back to you, it wasn't meant to. You need to accept that and go on with your life. To become free, you need to get out of your self-righteous resentment and off your pity pot. I love this expression, which originated with Alcoholics Anonymous, because it is such a wonderful, accurate description. When you are sitting on your pity pot, you are this helpless person who has no power at all. In order to have power, you want to stand on your own two feet and take responsibility. Take a moment and close your eyes, if you can, and imagine a beautiful stream of water in front of you. Take the old painful experience, the hurt, and the unforgiveness, and put the whole incident in the stream. See it begin to dissolve and drift downstream until it totally dissipates and disappears. You can do this as often as you want. This is a time for compassion and healing. Go within and connect with that part of yourself that knows how to heal. You are incredibly capable. Be willing to go to new levels to find capabilities of which you were not aware. Not just to cure dis-ease, but to truly heal yourself on all possible levels. To make yourself whole in the deepest sense of the word. To accept every part of yourself and every experience you have ever had. And to know that it is all part of the tapestry of your life this time around. I love Emmanuel's book. There is a passage in it which has a good message. The question to Emmanuel is, how do we experience painful circumstances without becoming embittered by them? And Emmanuel's reply is, by seeing them as lessons and not as retribution. Trust life, my friends. However far afield life seems to take you, this trip is necessary. You have come to traverse a wide terrain of experience in order to verify where truth lies and where your distortion is in that terrain. You will then be able to return to your home center, your soul self, refreshed and wiser. If only we could understand that all of our so-called problems are just opportunities for us to grow and to change, and that most of them come from the vibrations that we have been giving off, all we really need to do is change the way we think, be willing to dissolve the resentment, and be willing to forgive. Part 3. Loving yourself. Can you remember the last time you were in love? Your heart went, ah! It was such a wonderful feeling. It's the same thing with loving yourself, except that you will never leave. Once you have your love for yourself, it's with you for the rest of your life, so you want to make it the best relationship you can have. Chapter 8. How to Love Yourself. When you forgive and let go, not only does a huge weight drop off your shoulders, but the doorway to your own self-love opens. For many of you who have been working on loving yourselves, and for those of you who are just beginning, I'm going to explore some ways to help you learn how to love yourself. I call it my 10 steps, and I have sent thousands of people this list over the years. Loving yourself is a wonderful adventure. It's like learning to fly. Imagine if we all had the power to fly at will. How exciting it would be. Let's begin to love ourselves right now. Many of us seem to suffer from a lack of self-esteem at one level or another. It's very difficult for us to love ourselves because we have all these so-called faults inside us that we feel make it impossible to love ourselves exactly as we are. Usually, we make loving ourselves conditional, and then when we are involved in relationships, we make loving the other person conditional also. We've all heard that we really can't love someone else until we love ourselves. So now that we have seen the barriers we have set up for ourselves, How do we catapult to the next step? 1. Probably the most important key is to stop criticizing yourself. I've talked about criticism before. If we tell ourselves that we are okay, no matter what is going on, we can make changes in our lives easily. It is when we make ourselves bad that we have great difficulty. We all change, everyone. Every day is a new day, and we do things a little differently than we did the day before. Our ability to adapt and flow with the process of life is part of our power. Those who have come from dysfunctional homes often become super responsible and have gotten in the habit of judging themselves unmercifully. They have grown up with tension and anxiety. The message they get as children of dysfunctional homes is, there must be something wrong with me. Think for a moment about the words you use when scolding yourself. Some of the phrases people tell me are stupid, bad boy, bad girl, useless, careless, dumb, ugly, worthless, sloppy, dirty, etc. Are these the same words you use now when you're describing yourself? There is a tremendous need to build self-worth and value in ourselves, because when we feel not good enough, we find ways to keep ourselves miserable. We create illness or pain in our bodies. We procrastinate about things that would benefit us. We mistreat our bodies with food, alcohol, and drugs. We are all insecure in some ways because we are human. Let us learn not to pretend that we are perfect. Having to be perfect only puts immense pressure on ourselves, and it prevents us from looking at areas of our lives that need healing. Instead, we could discover our creative distinctions, our individualities, and appreciate ourselves for the qualities that set us apart from others. Each one of us has a unique role to play on this earth, and when we are critical of ourselves, we obscure it. 2. We want to stop scaring ourselves. Many of us terrorize ourselves with frightful thoughts and make situations worse than they are. We take a small problem and make it into a big monster. It's a terrible way to live, always expecting the worst out of life. How many of you go to bed at night creating the worst possible scenario of a problem? That's like a little child who imagines monsters under the bed and then gets terrified. It's no wonder you can't sleep. As a child, you needed your parent to come and soothe you. Now, as an adult, you know you have the ability to soothe yourself. People who are ill do this a lot. Often they visualize the worst, or they are immediately planning their funerals. They may give their power to the media and see themselves as statistics. You may also do this in relationships. Someone doesn't call you and immediately you decide that you are totally unlovable and that you'll never have another relationship again. You feel abandoned and rejected. You do the same thing with your job. Someone makes a remark at work and you begin to think you're going to be fired. You build these paralyzing thoughts in your mind. Remember, these frightening thoughts are negative affirmations. If you find yourself habitually reviewing a negative thought or situation in your mind, find an image of something you really would like to replace it with. It could be a beautiful view, or a sunset, flowers, a sport, or anything you love. Use that image as your switch to image every time you find that you are scaring yourself. You could say to yourself, no, I'm not going to think about that anymore. I'm going to think about sunsets, or roses, or Paris, or yachts, or waterfalls, or whatever your image is. If you keep doing this, you will eventually break the habit. Again, it takes practice. 3. Another way is to be gentle and kind and patient with yourself. I've heard, dear God, I pray for patience, and I want it right now. But patience is a very powerful tool. Most of us suffer from the expectation of immediate gratification. We must have it now. We don't have the patience to wait for anything. We get irritable if we have to wait in lines or are stuck in traffic. We want all the answers and all the goodies right now. Too often, we make other people's lives miserable by our own impatience. But impatience is a resistance to learning. Impatience is resistance to learning. We want the answers without learning the lesson or doing the steps that are necessary for our growth. You could think of your mind as if it were a garden. To begin with, a garden is a patch of dirt. You may have a lot of brambles of self-hatred and rocks of despair, anger and worry. An old tree called fear needs pruning. Once you get some of these things out of the way and the soil is in good shape, you add some little seeds or plants of joy and prosperity. The sun shines down on it, and you water it and give it nutrients and loving attention. At first, not much seems to be happening, but you don't stop. You keep taking care of your garden. If you are patient, the garden will grow and blossom. The same with your mind. You select the thoughts that will be nurtured, and with patience they grow and contribute to creating the garden of experiences you want. We all make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes while you are learning. As I said, so many of you are cursed with perfectionism. You won't give yourself a chance to really learn anything new, because if you don't do it perfectly in the first 3 minutes, you assume you are not good enough. Anything you're going to learn takes time. When you first begin doing something, it usually doesn't feel right. To show you what I mean, take a moment right now and clasp your hands together. There's no right or wrong way to do this. Clasp your hands and notice which thumb is on top. Now open your hands and then clasp your hands again with the other thumb on top. It probably feels strange, odd, maybe even wrong. Clasp them again the first way, then the second, and the first again, and the second way, and hold it. How does it feel now? Not so odd, not so bad. You're getting used to it. Maybe you can even learn to do it both ways. It's the same thing when we are doing something a new way. It may feel different, and we immediately judge it. Yet with a little bit of practice, it can become normal and natural. We're not going to love ourselves totally in one day, but we can love ourselves a little bit more every day. Each day, we give ourselves a little bit more love, and in 2 or 3 months, we will have come so much further in loving ourselves. So mistakes are your stepping stones. They are valuable because they're your teachers. Don't punish yourself for making a mistake. If you are willing to learn and grow from the mistake, then it serves as a step towards fulfillment in your life. Some of us have been working on ourselves for a very long time and wonder why we still have issues that come up for us. We need to keep reinforcing what we know, not resisting by throwing up our hands in the air and saying, what's the use? As we learn new ways, we need to be gentle and kind to ourselves. Remember the garden. When the negative weeds grow, pluck them out as quickly as you can. Number 4, we must learn to be kind to our minds. Let's not hate ourselves for having negative thoughts. We can think of our thoughts as building us up rather than beating us up. We don't have to blame ourselves for negative experiences. We can learn from these experiences. Being kind to ourselves means we stop all blame, all guilt, all punishment, and all pain. Relaxation can help us as well. Relaxation is absolutely essential for tapping into the power within. because if you are tense and frightened, you shut off your energy. It only takes a few minutes a day to allow the body and the mind to let go and relax. At any moment, you can take a few deep breaths, close your eyes, and release whatever tension you're carrying. As you exhale, become centered and say to yourself silently, "I love you. All is well." You will notice how much calmer you feel. You are building messages that say you don't have to go through life tense and frightened all the time. Meditate on a daily basis. I also recommend quieting your mind and listening to your own inner wisdom. Our society has made meditation into something mysterious and difficult to achieve. And yet meditation is one of the oldest and simplest processes there is. All we need to do is get into a relaxed state and repeat silently to ourselves words like love or peace or anything meaningful to us. Om is an ancient sound that I often use at my workshops, and it seems to work very well. We could even repeat, "I love myself," or "I forgive myself," or "I am forgiven," and then just listen for a while. Some people think that if they meditate, they have to stop their minds from thinking. We really can't stop the mind, but we can slow down our thoughts and then just let them flow through. Some people sit with a pad and pencil and write down their negative thoughts because they seem to dissipate more easily. If we can get to a state where we are watching our thoughts float by, oh, there's a fear thought and some anger. Now there's a love thought and now a disaster. There's an abandonment thought, a joy thought. And don't give these thoughts importance. Then we begin to use our tremendous power wisely. You can begin meditation anywhere and allow it to become a habit. Think of meditation as focusing on your higher power. You become connected with yourself and your inner wisdom. You can do it in whatever form you like. Some people go into a kind of meditation while they're jogging or walking. Again, don't make yourself wrong for doing it differently. I love to get on my knees in the garden and dig in the dirt. It's a great meditation for me. An excellent, easy-to-understand book on meditation is Minding the Body, Mending the Mind by Joan Borisenko. Visualize optimistic outcomes. Visualization is also very important, and there are many techniques you can use. Dr. Carl Symington, in his book Getting Well Again, recommends a lot of visualization techniques for people with cancer, and they often yield excellent results. With visualization, you create a clear, positive image that enhances your affirmation. Many of you have written to me about the kinds of visualizations you do along with your affirmations. The important thing to remember about visualizations is that they must be compatible with the kind of person you are. Otherwise, your visualizations will not work. For instance, a woman with cancer pictured the good killer cells in her body attacking the cancer and killing it. At the end of the visualization, she doubted whether she had done it correctly and didn't feel that it was working for her. So I asked her, "Are you a killer person?" And she answered, "I personally don't feel good about creating a war in my body." So I suggested that she change her visualization to one that was a little more gentle. I think it's better to use images like the sun melting the sick cells or a magician transforming them with his magic wand. When I had my cancer, I used the visualization of cool, clear water washing the diseased cells out of my body. We need to do visualizations that are not so offensive to us on the subconscious level. those of us who have family or friends who are sick do them an injustice by continually seeing them sick. Visualize them well. Send them good vibrations. However, remember that getting well is really up to them. There are many good audio tapes with guided visualizations and meditations that you can give them to help them through this process, if they are open. If not, just send them love. Everyone can visualize, describing your home, having a sexual fantasy, imagining what you would do to a person who hurt you, are all visualizations. It's amazing what the mind can do. Number 5. The next step is to praise yourself. Criticism breaks down the inner spirit, and praise builds it up. Acknowledge your power, your God self. We are all expressions of the infinite intelligence. When you berate yourself, you belittle the power that created you. Begin with the little things. Tell yourself that you are wonderful. If you do it once and then stop, it doesn't work. Keep at it, even if it's 1 minute at a time. And believe me, it does get easier. The next time you do something new or different, or something you are just learning and you're not too adept at, be there for yourself. It was a big thrill the first time I spoke at the Church of Religious Science in New York. I remember it very well. It was a Friday noon meeting. People wrote questions and put them in a basket for me, the speaker. I brought the basket to the podium and answered the questions and did a small treatment after each one. After I finished, I walked away from the podium and said to myself, "Louise, you were fantastic, considering this was the first time out. By the time you do this 6 times, you're going to be a pro." I didn't berate myself and say, "Oh, you forgot to say this or that." I didn't want to have the second time be something that would frighten me. If I beat myself up the first time, I would beat myself up the second time, and I would dread speaking in the end. And after a couple of hours, I thought of what I could change to improve. I never made myself wrong. I was very careful to praise myself and congratulate myself for being wonderful. And by the time I had conducted 6 meetings, I was a pro. I think we can apply this method in all areas of our lives. I continued speaking at the meetings for quite some time. It was wonderful training because it taught me how to think on my feet. Allow yourself to accept good, whether you think you deserve it or not. I've discussed how believing that we are not deserving is our unwillingness to accept good in our lives. It's what stops us from having what we want. How could we create anything good for ourselves if we think we don't deserve to have good? Think about the laws of deserving in your home. Did you feel good enough, smart enough, tall enough, pretty enough, whatever? And what do you have to live for? You know you are here for a reason, and it's not just to buy a new car every few years. What are you willing to do to fulfill yourself? Are you willing to do affirmations, visualizations, treatments? Are you willing to forgive? Are you willing to meditate? How much mental effort are you willing to exert to change your life and make it the life you want? Number 6. Loving yourself means supporting yourself. Reach out to friends and allow them to help you. You really are being strong when you ask for help when you need it. So many of you have learned to be so self-reliant and self-sufficient. You can't ask for help because your ego won't let you. Instead of trying to do it all yourself and then getting angry at yourself because you can't make it, try asking for help next time. There are support groups in every city. There are 12-step programs for almost every problem. And in some areas, there are healing circles and church-affiliated organizations. If you can't find what you want, you can start your own group. It's not as scary as you might think. Gather together two or three friends who have the same issues that you have and set up a few guidelines to follow. Have a book to study or tapes to listen to. If you do it with love in your heart, your little group will grow. People will be attracted like a magnet. Don't worry if it starts to grow and your meeting space gets too small. The universe always provides. If you don't know what to do, write my office and we'll send you guidelines on how to conduct a little group. You really can be there for each other. I started the Hayride in Los Angeles in 1985 with six men with AIDS in my living room. We didn't know what we were going to do about this intense crisis. I told them we weren't going to sit around playing Ain't It Awful, because we already knew that. We did what we could on a positive level to support each other. We're still meeting today, and we have about 200 people coming every Wednesday night to West Hollywood Park. It's an extraordinary group for people with AIDS, and everybody is welcome. People come from all over the world to see how this group functions and because they feel supported. It's not only me, it's the group. Everyone contributes to making it effective. We meditate and do visualizations. We network and share information about alternative therapies and the latest medical methods. There are energy tables at one end of the room where people can lie down and others share healing energies by laying on hands or praying for them. We have signs of mind practitioners they can talk to. At the end, we sing and hug one another. We want people to go out feeling better than when they came in. And sometimes people receive a positive lift that lasts for several days. Support groups have become the new social form, and they are very effectual tools in this complex day and age. Many New Thought churches, such as Unity and Religious Science, have ongoing weekly support groups. Many groups are listed in New Age magazines and newspapers. Networking is so important. It sparks you and gets you going. I suggest that people who have similar ideas share time with one another on a regular basis. When people work together on a common goal, they bring their pain, confusion, anger, or whatever, and come together, not to moan, but to find a way to go beyond, to rise above, and to grow up in a way. If you are very dedicated, very self-disciplined, and very spiritual, you can do a lot of work by yourself on yourself. When you are with a group of people doing the same thing, you can make quantum leaps because you learn from one another. Every single person in the group is a teacher. So if you have issues that need working on, I would suggest, if possible, that you get into a group of some sort where you can work them through. Number 7, love your negatives. They are all part of your creation, just as we are all part of God's creation. The intelligence that created us doesn't hate us because we make mistakes or get angry at our children. This intelligence knows that we are doing the best we can and loves all of its creation as we can love ours. You and I have all made negative choices. And if we keep punishing ourselves for them, it becomes a habit pattern, and we'll find it very tiresome to let them go and to move on to more positive choices. If you keep repeating, "I hate my job, I hate my house, I hate my illness, I hate this relationship, I hate this, I hate that," very little new good can come into your life. No matter what negative situation you are in, it's there for a reason. Otherwise, you wouldn't have it in your life. Dr. John Harrison, the author of Love Your Disease, says that patients are never to be condemned for having multiple operations or illnesses. Actually, patients can congratulate themselves for finding a safe way to have their needs met. We want to understand that whatever issue or problem we have, we contributed to creating it in order to handle certain situations. Once we realize this, then we can find a positive way to fulfill our needs. Sometimes people with cancer or other so-called terminal illnesses have such a hard time saying no to an authoritative figure in their life that on an unconscious level, they will create a major dis-ease to say no for them. I knew a woman who, when she realized the illness she was creating for herself was just to be able to refuse her father's demands, decided to begin to live for herself for once. She began to say no to him, and while it was difficult for her at first, as she continued to stand up for herself, she was delighted to find herself getting well. Whatever our negative patterns are, we can learn to fulfill those needs in more positive ways. That's why it's so important to ask yourself the question, what is the payoff from this experience? What am I getting that's positive? We don't like to answer that question. However, if we really look within and are honest with ourselves, we will find that answer. Perhaps your answer would be, it's the only time I get loving attention from my spouse. Once realized, you can begin to look for more positive ways to achieve this. Humor is another potent tool. It helps us release and lighten up during stressful experiences. At the hayride, we set time aside for jokes. Sometimes we have a guest speaker called the Laugh Lady. She has a contagious laugh and puts everyone on a laughter cycle. We can't always take ourselves too seriously, and laughter is very healing. I also recommend watching old comedies, such as those of Laurel and Hardy, when you're feeling low or down. When I did private counseling, I would do my best to get people to begin to laugh at their problems. When we can see our lives as a stage play, with soap opera and drama and comedy, we get a better perspective, and we are on the way to healing. Humor enables us to pull back from the experience and to see it in a larger perspective. Number 8, take care of your body. Think of your body as this marvelous house in which you live for a while. You would love your house and take care of it, wouldn't you? So watch what you put into your body. Drug and alcohol abuse is so prevalent because they are two of the most popular methods of escape. If you are into drugs, it doesn't mean that you are a bad person. It means you haven't found a more positive way of fulfilling your needs. Drugs beckon to us, come and play with me and we'll have a good time. And it's true, they can make you feel wonderful. However, they alter your reality so much, and although it isn't evident at first, you have to pay a terrible price in the end. After taking drugs for a while, your health deteriorates immensely, and you feel awful most of the time. Drugs affect your immune system, which can lead to numerous physical ailments. Also, after repeated use, you develop an addiction, and you have to wonder what made you start taking drugs in the first place. Peer pressure may have compelled you to take them in the beginning, but continued and repeated use is another story. I have yet to meet anyone who really loves themselves and who is hooked on drugs. We use drugs and alcohol to escape our childhood feelings of not being good enough, and when they wear off, we feel worse than before. Then we usually have a load of guilt, too. We can know that it's safe to feel our feelings and acknowledge them. The feelings pass. They don't stay. Stuffing food into our bodies is another way to hide our love. We can't live without food because it fuels our bodies and helps to create new cells. Even though we may know the basics of good nutrition, often we still use food and diets to punish ourselves and to create obesity. We've become a nation of junk food addicts. We have been on what I call the Great American Diet for decades, filling ourselves with processed foods of every sort. We've allowed the food companies and their advertising gimmicks to influence our eating habits. Doctors aren't even taught nutrition in medical schools unless they take it as an extracurricular subject. Most of what we consider conventional medicine at the moment concentrates on drugs and surgery. So if we really want to learn about nutrition, it's an issue that we must take into our own hands. It's an act of loving ourselves to become aware of what we put into our mouths and how it makes us feel. If you eat lunch and an hour later you start feeling sleepy, you might ask yourself, "What did I eat?" You may have consumed something that isn't good for your body at that particular time. Start noticing what gives you energy and what depletes you and brings you down. You can do this by trial and error, or you could find a good nutritionist who can answer some of your questions. Remember that what's right for one person isn't necessarily right for another. Our bodies are different. A macrobiotic diet is wonderful for many people. So is Harvey and Marilyn Diamond's Fit for Life method. They are totally different concepts, and yet they both work. Every body is different from every other body, so we can't say that only one method works. You have to find out which way works best for you. Then find exercise that you enjoy, that is fun to do. Create a positive mental attitude about your exercise. Often, you create obstacles in your bodies primarily as a result of what you absorb from other people. Again, you need to forgive yourself and stop putting anger and resentment into your body if you want to create changes. Combining affirmations with your exercise is a way to reprogram negative concepts about your body and its shape. We are in a time now where new technologies for health are multiplying, and we are learning to combine some ancient healing methods, such as Ayurvedic medicine, with sound wave technology. I have been studying how sound can stimulate our brain waves and accelerate our learning and healing. There is research that shows that we can cure illness by mentally changing our DNA structure. I think that between now and the end of the century, we are going to explore a range of possibilities that will be enormously beneficial to much of the population. Number 9, mirror work. I often emphasize the importance of mirror work in order to find out the cause of an issue that keeps us from loving ourselves. There are several ways that you can practice mirror work. I like to look in the mirror the first thing in the morning and say to myself, "I love you. What can I do for you today? How can I make you happy?" Listen to your inner voice and start following through with what you hear. You may not get any messages to begin with because you're so used to scolding yourself and you don't know how to respond with a kind, loving thought. If something unpleasant happens to you during the day, go to the mirror and say, "I love you anyway," because events come and go, but the love that you have for yourself can be constant, and it is the most important quality you possess in your life. If something wonderful happens, go to the mirror and say thank you. Acknowledge yourself for creating this wonderful experience. You can forgive in the mirror too. Forgive yourself and forgive others. You can talk to other people in the mirror, especially when you're afraid to talk to them in person. You can clean up old issues with people, parents, bosses, doctors, children, lovers. You can say all sorts of things that you would be afraid to say otherwise. And remember to end by asking them for their love and approval, because that is what you really want. People who have problems loving themselves are almost always people who are not willing to forgive, because not forgiving shuts the door to the heart. When we forgive and let go, not only does a huge weight drop off our shoulders, but the doorway to our own self-love opens up. People will say, "Oh, such a load has dropped off." Well, of course it has, because we've been carrying this burden forever. Dr. John Harrison states that forgiveness of both the self and the parents, coupled with the release of past hurts, cures more illness than any antibiotic ever could. It takes a lot to make children stop loving their parents, but when they do, it takes even more for them to forgive them. When we won't forgive, when we won't let go, we're binding ourselves to the past. And when we are stuck in the past, we cannot live in present time. And if we are not living in the present, how can we create our glorious future? Old garbage from the past just creates more garbage for the future. Affirmations performed in front of a mirror are advantageous because you learn the truth of your existence. When you do an affirmation and you immediately hear a negative response, such as, "Who are you kidding?" or "It can't be true," or "You don't deserve that," then you have received a gift to use. You cannot make the changes you want until you are willing to see what is holding you back. The negative response you have just discovered is like a gift in that it becomes the key to freedom. Turn that negative response into a positive affirmation, such as, "I now deserve all good. I allow good experiences to fill my life." And repeat the new affirmation until it does become a new part of your life. I have also seen families change enormously when just one person does affirmations. Many people at the Hayride come from estranged families. Their parents literally will not talk to them. And I've had them repeat the affirmation, "I have wonderful, loving, warm, open communication with every member of my family, including my mother or including my father." Every time that person or the family comes to mind, I suggest that they go to the mirror and say the affirmation over and over again. It's often amazing to see the parents actually show up at the meeting 3 or 6 or 9 months later. Number 10. Love yourself now. Don't wait until you get it right. Dissatisfaction with yourself is a habit pattern. If you can be satisfied with yourself now, if you can love and approve of yourself now, then when good comes into your life, you will be able to enjoy it. Once you learn to love yourself, you can begin to love and accept other people. We can't change other people, so leave them alone. We spend a lot of energy trying to make others different. If we used half that energy on ourselves, we could make ourselves different. And when we are different, others respond differently to us. You can't learn life for another person. Everyone has to learn his or her particular lesson. All you can do is learn for yourself, and loving yourself is the first step. So you are not brought down by other people's destructive behaviors. If you are in a situation where you are with a really negative person who doesn't want to change, you need to love yourself enough to move away from that. One woman told me that her husband was very negative and that she didn't want him to be a bad influence on her two little children. I suggested that she start affirming that her husband was a wonderful, supportive man who really is working on himself and is bringing out his best qualities. I told her to affirm what she would like to have happen, and every time he was negative, simply run the affirmation through her mind. However, if the relationship continued to be negative, no matter what affirmation she was saying, then that might be the answer. The relationship simply wouldn't work anymore. Because of the increasing divorce rate in our country, I think a question that many women need to ask themselves before they have children is, am I willing to support these children totally on my own? Being a single parent has become more and more the norm, and it's almost always the woman who acquires the added responsibility of raising children by herself. There was a time when marriages lasted a lifetime, but times have changed. So it's definitely a situation to be considered. Far too often we stay in abusive relationships and allow ourselves to be put down. What we are saying to ourselves is, I'm not worth loving, so I will stay here and accept this behavior because I must deserve it, and I'm sure nobody else would want me. I know that I sound simplistic and repeat the same expressions over and over again, but I truly do believe that the quickest way to change any problem is to love who we are. It's amazing how the loving vibrations we send out will attract to us people who are loving. Unconditional love is the goal I think we have come here to attain. It begins with self-acceptance and self-love. You are not here to please other people or to live your lives their way. You can only live it your own way and walk your own pathway. You have come to fulfill yourself and to express love on the deepest level. You are here to learn and grow and to absorb and project compassion and understanding. When you leave the planet, you don't take your relationship or your automobile or your bank account or your job with you. The only thing you take is your capacity to love. Chapter 9, Loving the Child Within. If you can't get close to other people, it's because you don't know how to be close to your own inner child. The child in you is scared and hurting. Be there for your child. One of the core issues that we want to explore is healing the forgotten child within. Most of us have ignored our inner child for far too long. Doesn't matter how old you are, there is a little child within you who needs love and acceptance. If you're a woman, no matter how self-reliant you are, you have a little girl who's very tender and needs help. And if you are a man, no matter how macho you are, no matter how old you are, you still have a little boy inside of you who craves warmth and affection. Every age that you have been is within you, within your consciousness and memory. As children, when something went wrong, you tended to believe that there was something wrong with you. Children developed the idea that if they could only do it right, then parents, or whoever, would love them, and they wouldn't beat them or punish them. So whenever the child wants something and doesn't get it, he or she believes, I'm not good enough, I'm defective. And as we grow older, we reject certain parts of ourselves. At this point in our lives, right now, we need to begin to make ourselves whole and accept every part of who we are. The part that did all the stupid things, the part that was funny looking, the part that was scared, the part that was very foolish and silly, the part that had egg on its face, every single part of ourselves. I think that we often turn off or tune out around the age of 5. We make that decision because we think that there is something wrong with us, and we're not going to have anything to do with the child anymore. There is a parent inside as well. You have a child and you have a parent, and most of the time the parent scolds the child, almost on a non-stop basis. If you listen to your inner dialogue, you can hear the scolding. You can hear the parent tell you what you are doing wrong or how you are not good enough. Consequently, we begin a war with ourselves, and we start to criticize ourselves the way our parents have been criticizing us. You're stupid, you're not good enough, you don't do it right, screwed up again. It becomes a habit pattern. When we become adults, most of us totally ignore the child within us, or we criticize the child in the same way we used to be criticized. We continue the pattern over and over again. I once heard John Bradshaw, author of several marvelous books on healing the inner child, say that each of us has 25,000 hours of parent tapes within us by the time we are adults. How many hours of those tapes do you think are telling you how wonderful you are? How much says that you are loved or that you are bright and intelligent? or that you could do anything you wanted to and would grow up to be the greatest person. In reality, how many hours of those tapes are saying no, no, no in all its many forms? It's no wonder we say no to ourselves, or should, all the time. We are responding to those old tapes. However, they are only tapes and are not the reality of your being. They are not the truth of your existence. They are just tapes you carry within, and they can be erased or re-recorded. Every time you say that you are scared, realize it is the child in you who's scared. The grown-up really isn't afraid. Yet the adult isn't being there for the child. The adult and the child need to develop a loving relationship with each other. Talk to each other about everything you do. I know it may sound silly, but it works. Let the child know that no matter what happens, you will never turn away or run away. You will always be there for it and love it. For instance, if, when you were very young, you had a bad experience with a dog, that is, maybe it scared you or even bit you, the little child inside could still be frightened of dogs, even though now you are a great big adult. You may see a dog on the street that is tiny, but the little child inside you reacts in a total panic. It says, "Dog, I'm going to be hurt." This is a wonderful opportunity for the adult inside of you to say to the child, "It's okay, I'm grown up now, I will take care of you. I won't let that dog hurt you. You don't have to be frightened anymore." Start comforting your own child in this way. Healing the hurts of the past. I have found that working with the inner child is most valuable in helping to heal the hurts of the past. We are not always in touch with the feelings of the frightened little child within us. If your childhood was full of fear and battling, and you now mentally beat yourself up, you are continuing to treat your inner child in much the same way. The child inside, however, has no place to go. You need to go beyond your parents' limitations. You need to connect with the little lost child inside. He or she needs to know that you care. Take a moment now and tell your child that you care. "I care for you. I love you. I really love you." Maybe you've been saying this to the big person, the adult inside you. So start talking now to the little child. Visualize that you are taking him or her by the hand and go everywhere together for a few days and see what wonderfully joyous experiences you can have together. You need to communicate with that part of yourself. What are the messages you want to hear? Sit down quietly, close your eyes, and talk to your child. If you haven't talked to them in 62 years, it may take a few times before the child will believe that you really want to talk to it. Be persistent. "I want to talk to you. I want to see you. I want to love you." And you will eventually connect. You may see the child inside you, you may feel it, or you may hear it. One of the statements that you can make when you first talk to your child is an apology. Say that you are sorry that you haven't talked to it in all these years, or that you are sorry for scolding it for so long. Tell the child you want to make up for all the time spent apart from each other. Ask it how you can make it happy. Ask the child what frightens it. Ask how you can help, and ask what it wants from you. Start out with simple questions, and you will get the answer. "What can I do to make you happy? What would you like today?" For instance, you can say to the child, "I'm going to work. What do you want to do?" They may answer, "Go to the beach." The communication will have begun. In your mind's eye, See them going to the beach and having fun. Be consistent. If you can take just a few moments a day to begin to connect with the little person inside of you, life is going to be a lot better. Communicating with your inner child. Some of you may already be doing inner child work. There are many books on the subject, and many workshops and lectures are given about it. Self-Parenting by John Pollard III is excellent, and it's filled with wonderful exercises and activities that you can do with your inner child. If you are serious about doing practical work with your inner child, I recommend that you pick up this book. As I've said before, there is a lot of help offered in this area. You are not alone and helpless, but you need to reach out and ask for help so that you can get assistance. Another suggestion I have is to find a photograph of yourself as a child and really look at the photograph. Do you see a miserable little kid? Do you see a happy child? Whatever you see, connect with it. If you see a frightened child, ask why it was frightened and start doing something to make it feel better. Find several photos of your younger self and talk to the child in each photo. It also helps to talk to your child in the mirror. If you had a nickname as a child, use that name. Have a box of tissues handy. I suggest that you sit down in front of a mirror, because if you're standing, as soon as it gets difficult, you will run out the door. Instead, sit down with your box of tissues and start talking. Another exercise you can do is to communicate through writing. Again, lots of information will surface. Use two different colored pens or felt markers. With one colored pen in your dominant hand, write a question. With the other colored pen in your non-dominant hand, let your child write the answer. It's a very fascinating exercise. When you are writing the question, the adult thinks it knows the answer. But by the time you pick up the pen with the awkward hand, the answer often comes out quite differently than expected. You can draw together, too. Many of you probably loved drawing and coloring when you were little children, until you were told to be neat and not to draw outside of the lines. So begin drawing again. Use your non-dominant hand to draw a picture about an event that just happened. And notice how you feel. Ask your child a question and just let it draw with the non-dominant hand and see what it shows. If you can get together with others in small core groups or support groups, you can work on these ideas together. You can all let your inner children draw pictures. Then you can sit around and discuss what the pictures mean. The information you receive can be surprisingly insightful. Play with your little child. Do things that your child likes to do. When you were little, what did you really like to do? And when was the last time you did it? Too often, the parent inside us stops us from having fun because it's not the adult thing to do. So take the time to play and have fun. Do the silly things you did when you were young, such as jumping in piles of leaves and running under the hose spray. Watch other children at play. It will bring back memories of the games you played. If you want more fun in your life, make the connection with your inner child and come from that space of spontaneity and joy. I promise that you will start having more fun in your life. Were you welcomed as a child? Were your parents really glad you were born? Were they delighted with your sexuality? Or did they want the opposite sex? Did you feel you were wanted as a child? Was there a celebration when you arrived? Whatever the responses were then, welcome your child now. Create a celebration. Tell it all the wonderful things you would tell a little baby who was welcomed into its new life. What is it you always wanted your parents to tell you when you were a child? What was it they never said that you wanted to hear? All right, tell your child that very thing. Tell it to your child every day for a month while looking in the mirror and see what happens. If you had alcoholic or abusive parents as a child, you can meditate and visualize them as sober, gentle people. Give your child what it wants. It has probably been deprived for too long. Start visualizing the sort of life you would like to have with this child. When the child feels safe and happy, it can trust you. Ask, what do I need to do so that you can trust me? Again, you'll be amazed at some of the answers. If you had parents who are not loving at all, and it's really hard for you to relate to them, find a picture of what you think a loving father or a loving mother looks like. Put the pictures of the loving parents around the photo of yourself as a child. Create some new images. Rewrite your childhood if you must. The beliefs that you learned when you were little are still inside the child. If your parents had rigid ideas, and you're very hard on yourself, or tend to build walls, your child is probably still following your parents' rules. If you continue to pick on yourself for every mistake, it must be very scary for your inner child to wake up in the morning. What are you going to yell at me about today? What our parents did to us in the past was their consciousness. We are the parents now. We are using our consciousness. If you are still refusing to take care of the little child, you are stuck in self-righteous resentment. Invariably, it means there is still someone to forgive. So what is it you haven't forgiven yourself for? What do you need to let go of? Well, whatever it is, just let it go. If we are not giving the child praise and attention now, our parents aren't the blame. They were doing what they thought was right in that particular space and time. However, now in the present moment, we know what we can do to nourish the child within us. Those of you who have had or have a pet know what it's like to come home and have the pet greet you at the door. It doesn't care what you're wearing. It doesn't care how old you are, or if you have wrinkles, or how much money you made today. The animal only cares that you're there. It loves you unconditionally. Do that for yourself. Be thrilled that you are alive and that you are here. You are the one person you are going to live with forever. Until you are willing to love your inner child, it's very hard for other people to love you. Accept yourself unconditionally and open-heartedly. I find that it is often very helpful to create a meditation to help your child feel safe. Since I was a child of incest, I invented a wonderful imagery for my little girl. First of all, she has a fairy godmother who looks just like Billy Burke in The Wizard of Oz, because that's what really appeals to her. I know that when I'm not with her, she is with her fairy godmother, and she is always safe. She also lives in a penthouse way high up with a doorman and two large dogs, so she knows that no one will ever hurt her again. When I can make her feel absolutely safe, then I, as the adult, can help her to release the old painful experiences. There was a time recently when I got off center and cried for 2 hours. I realized that the little child in me suddenly felt very hurt and unprotected. I had to tell her that she wasn't bad or wrong, rather that she was reacting to something that had happened. So as quickly as I was able to, I did some affirmations and meditated, knowing that there was a power far greater that would support and love me. After that, the little girl didn't feel so afraid and alone. I'm also a great believer in teddy bears. When you were very little, often your teddy bear was your very first friend. It was your confidant because you could tell it all your secrets and troubles, and it never snitched on you. It was always there for you. Take your teddy bear out of the closet now and let your child have it once again, or buy a new one. I think it would also be marvelous for hospitals to supply teddy bears in all the beds, so that when the little child in us feels alone and frightened in the middle of the night, they could have a teddy bear to hug.